This is the Rock and Roll Autopsy Podcast.
All right, I'm going to zap her again. Charge up the paddles. Come on, let's go.
Sorry, Doctor.
Hold the compressions.
Clear.
Straight line.
Good evening and welcome to Rock and Roll Autopsy. We are the Forensic Files on your radio dial. My name is Scott. And have we got a great show for you tonight? No, we don't. Damn it! The phone is ringing again. It's the request line. All right, let's pick it up. WRNRA, east of the Rockies.
Hello? Hello, this is President Joe Biden.
President Biden? Wow, what an honor. What a surprise. Welcome to the show.
I just wanted to say congratulations, Rock and Roll Autopsy, on 100 episodes. Your success serves as a fine example of how far a strappy, average American can go with limited talent, intellect, and financial resources.
Man, I am blown away. Thanks so much for the kind words about our shitty podcast. Listen, you called the request line. Is there a song you'd like us to perform an autopsy on?
I was hoping that you would do Brown Sugar by the Rolling Stones. Barack and I love that song.
Brown Sugar by the Rolling Stones? You got it. All right, buckle up, gang. The subject of our rock and roll autopsy tonight will be Brown Sugar by ageless rock legends, the Rolling Stones. We'll get the show started after these very important messages from our sponsors.
What's up, music nerds? Are you tired of wading through a sea of mediocre music, desperately seeking to find a glimmer of greatness? You're in luck. My name is Mark, and I am the host of the podcast, Songs That Don't Suck. Each week, I scour the depths of new music playlists to unearth hidden gems that defy the trends and deliver pure sonic bliss. No matter the genre, if it doesn't suck, it's on my radar. So find us on your favorite podcast platform and subscribe today. And as always, keep searching for and listening to Songs That Don't Suck.
Breaking news!
What is this garbage you're watching? I want to watch the news.
This is the news.
All right, gang, we've got our intrepid rock and roll beat reporter on the line. Seven-time Silver Sow Award winner and winner of the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest 1971, 76, 87, 92, and 2011, Rico motherfucking Gnu on the line. Rico, how are you, man?
Man, thank you for that. I'm good, dude. How are you doing?
You know, dude, I've been really burning the candle at both ends lately, and I can't keep doing it, man. I got to get back to what is, I got to find my way back to joy in life, which is why I picked up the phone and called my rock and roll newsman, because I love the rock and roll, and I got to know what's going on, man.
I'm going to give it to you, dude, but first, can I just say, thanks to everybody out there for sticking with us through 100 of these, dude. This is our 100th episode. I couldn't be thrilled. I feel like we've got about 100,000 more of these to go, but this is a pretty big night for us. This is our 100th episode, Scott. You know, it's funny, Rico, because I'm someone who generally is very uncomfortable acknowledging or celebrating anything. It's just not my bag. It makes me uncomfortable. But I did give it some thought and I actually reflected on it. And I think that, you know, we did a podcast. We'll pull the curtain back. We'll get to the news here, but we got to take a moment for this.
Yes, stick with us through this.
We did a podcast like 10 years ago. I really fell in love with like what Kevin Smith was doing over there on Smodcast. And I thought, man, I'd love to do that, you know? And you and I, as you get older, we've been friends forever, but as you get older, you drift in and out of friendships and you lose touch with people. So having a podcast with a friend that you've known since you were, you know, super young, teenager, whatever it was for us, it helps keep you kind of tethered to one another and your friendship. It gives some accountability. So we did that podcast for like a year. I remember Lydia was just a baby or just maybe a little year older. I can't recall.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that long?
I mean, maybe she wasn't, was she born yet even when we started?
I think so. Yeah. Cause I remember we had to stop one episode short to take her to urgent care. I remember, but I think she shoved an earring up her nostril if I recall, but anyway, I'm getting way off course here, but the point being is that we started that thing. And then like all podcasts, they go so many episodes, you know, there's a million podcasts out there and the vast majority of them have a run of, you know, a year, most much less because the people engaged in them, the people doing them realize it's a ton of work. It's a ton of commitment. It's actually hard to sit down and do it once a week and find the time when you're grown ass adults with jobs and families. And so all podcasts, the vast majority of them, the vast majority die after like a year. And that one did too. And you kept on me for like a decade. We got to start a podcast, got to start a podcast. And you'd be got to start it again. And you would keep on me and I'd be like, God damn, I don't want to do it again. It's so much work. And it never worked. We never got any listeners. And I'd be like, I don't want to do it. And then you'd keep it up. You were like, we got to do it, got to do something. And I'd be like, man, Rico, will you freaking drop it? You never did. To your credit, you were persistent. And also to your credit, after starting this thing, I mean, you have been Mr. Consistency. You're there every week. You're always prepared. You take copious notes. Rico does all the research for the show, does all the behind the scenes work on it. Always make sure I've taken more episodes off than he does. And so to find it's hard to do it. It's hard. It's actually hard to do these stupid things just because it's a commitment outside of work and family that just becomes hard to keep. To get to 100, I'm being long-winded. It actually does, for as much as I hate acknowledging this sort of thing, it actually is an accomplishment. It does mean something. So congratulations to you. Thank you for all the hard work you've put in over the last 2 years doing this damn thing.
Yeah, man. And likewise, I couldn't have said it better, except instead of me reverse it onto yourself, I mean, this would not be where it is without you. You let me ramble, you let me fumble through shit, and you are the fucking solid motherfucker in this show, man. And your editing skills and your design work is amazing. Listen, man, when we started doing this again with fucking Love Gun all the way back in ep one, really this was kind of like a social experiment to a certain degree. We were just like, we're just gonna do this again and just fucking see what happens. And for me, this was even more of an experiment because I am not the greatest communicator on the planet. And so largely podcasting, even though we did it before, this is talking like this is way out of my wheelhouse, way, way out of my wheelhouse. You know that. And so for us to have gone through and get to 100, man, it's amazing. And I would not want to do this with anybody else, dude. And I hope that we can do about one or 2,000 more of these. So good on you, man. Like, congrats to you. Thank you for
for letting me pester you enough to do this again.
And you, I mean, and you carry podcasts now. You do them on your own when you have to, when I can't make it. And so you script them and come up with your own topic and just get on the mic and riff for 30 minutes and they turn out great. And also we'll plug, even we even started a second podcast that's in its infancy. It's football. It's not super silly. It is a little bit of time. We're both big Cleveland Browns fans. So we do a podcast called the Brown Notes Podcast. And so we even branched out and started doing two. So it's like extra commitment because now we're not just doing this one. We're doing a second one every week, you know? And yeah. So we are up to our eyeballs in podcasting. And thank you to everyone out there who's listened. We don't get a ton of feedback. We'd love to get more, but we have had some nice reviews and some nice exchanges with people on Mastodon and Twitter, now X, and Instagram. And so we've met everybody we've ever met through the podcast has been super kind and supportive. It kind of surprises me because the world is so shitty these days, but we've met nothing but nice people. We had, there was one cat on Mastodon who's like, you fuckers make me laugh so hard. He's like, don't stop doing it. And I just, it means a lot, man, because you know, you and I are just really just being ourselves and it's kind of what keeps us going. We don't make any money at this. We don't have enough we don't have enough listens to do that, but we get good feedback from people and it makes it worth doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So here's to 100 and here's to several hundred more. So with that, let's get to the news.
Yes, sir.
So we just had the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony and everybody, all of you three or four people out there that might listen to us know how we feel about the Hall of Fame, but I feel like we just need to cover a few of the highlights, Scott, the one or two that might have happened during that night. So Sheryl Crow, she started things off. I thought that this was pretty cool. Like she has always had, you know, a fandom for Stevie Nicks and Frampton. And so her and Stevie Nicks and Peter Frampton did Every Day is a Winding Rose. That was kind of a highlight. So Sheryl Crow started things off. Scott, are you a Sheryl Crow fan?
I like a few of her songs and I like that song quite a bit. And she's hot.
Yeah, totally, dude. Like that makes it more listenable in my opinion. I'm just saying how I feel, dude. Hey, Chaka Khan, inducted into the Hall of Fame, as we know, she did some songs. She did a song with Sia. You like Sia? I love Sia, dude. Sia is amazing. She's an amazing vocalist. Chaka Khan's pretty cool. My dad was a big Chaka Khan fan. And her most famous song, I feel for you, written by Prince, another Prince song that made somebody else's career even bigger than it already was. So, Chaka Khan, dude. I like her. George Michael, they honored him with some people. I thought that's kind of cool. George Michael, you know what? I was never a gigantic George Michael fan. Never hated him, though. But I always thought he was a really great vocalist. And I liked the song. I mean, did you have any kind of fandom for George Michael at all?
Yeah, I mean, I remember back in the day, obviously, the Wham thing was a big hit in the MTV era, but then also Faith. I mean, it was a great track. I mean, I always thought he was a great singer and, you know, I have no beef with George Michael.
So help me understand this. This one, they talk about Kate Bush pushing boundaries even when she doesn't show up. So she didn't show up and Big Boy was speaking on her behalf. Because Kate Bush is kind of a topic. I mean, Hall of Fame inductee. Can you help me with the Kate Bush thing? Do you have any, can you fill me in on the Kate Bush thing?
I'm going to be honest with you. Kate Bush is someone who, and as an elderly person who lived through the 80s, I somehow missed Kate Bush. This person, this artist did not come on my radar until season 4 of Stranger Things. And now she's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and I have no idea who she is. I have no clue. So.
Yeah, me either. So can we say that season 4 of Stranger Things got her into the Hall of Fame, possibly?
It certainly raised her profile.
Right, right. Dude, Willie Nelson, man, how much can be said about him that hasn't already been said? It's Willie fucking Nelson, man. He was spoken for by Dave Matthews. Listen to some of the people that he thanked. Listen to this list. Ready? Ray Charles, Booker T. Jones, Leon Russell, Johnny Cash, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. How's that for a fucking list, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest with you, man. Willie Nelson is like, I'm a sucker for this kind of music, man. We talked about it during the Johnny Cash episode. This is right in my wheelhouse. There's a record that Willie did in 1998 called Teatro. Can you see it on Wikipedia? Yeah. Holding it up to the camera.
Yep.
It is amazing. It opens with an instrumental track. If you don't think that Willie Nelson is a guitar hero, listen to the opening instrumental track on, I think it's pronounced Teatro, but it is a great record. And I mean, it's just, I love this kind of music. The guitar playing is amazing, super like Spanish influence in places. It's not like it's like outlaw country, you know, and I would say it's got more kind of Spanish flavor than it does like country flavor. But Willie is right in my wheelhouse, man.
Yeah, I mean, I like. For people who are so used to like post 80s, anything after 1980s, like pop country-ish kind of stuff, how do we, and you can do a much better job of this, like this kind of music, like Jennings, Cash, Willie Nelson, how do you describe, because this is the kind, I love this shit just like you do. How do you describe this to people so that they can experience how cool this shit really is?
Here's how I draw the distinction. Okay, that stuff that you named, Waylon, yeah, Willie, Cash, I'm calling all that outlaw country.
Yes.
And anything that's new, I call bro country.
Here was kind of a surprise, dude. So Link Wray was an inductee. His most famous for the tune Rumble. I don't know if very many people out there know that song, but if you don't, you should go listen to it. And Page made an appearance at the Hall of Fame, and he played Rumble by Link Wray. He first started out, you know, saying a few words via video. But then there he was, and he did Rumble in front of everybody. And so that was kind of a surprise thing. I watched it. I'm sure you watched it. I thought it was pretty freaking rad, dude. What do you think about that?
You're speaking of Jimmy Page, and I did not watch it. I have not watched a moment of Rock and Roll Hall of Fame coverage, not a second of it. So I'm sorry.
You should check it out. Well, that's okay. Whenever you get time, go watch Paige doing Rumble. It's pretty cool, man. It's, you know, Rumble's not the most complicated song on the planet, but it's a legendary song. It's an important song. And to watch Paige do it on stage at the Hall of Fame, I thought was pretty cool.
How'd he look? Was he well received?
Oh, totally, man. Like, he looked good. He sounded good. Everybody was on their feet, you know, standing ovation. It was pretty cool.
Did people like en masse, like, you know, grab their 14-year-old daughters and lock them up?
Well, yeah. I mean, you kind of would have to with him around, right? Like, he's part of that group, right? Yeah, baby. Hey, this is the one I wanted to mention. You know how we talked about Jan Wenner and his remarks in Rolling Stone about his elitist, these are the people that have moved me and these other people aren't worthy of my recognition. Well, Bernie Taupin, rightfully so, got inducted into the Hall of Fame. Bernie Taupin, I mean, did you see the movie Rocket Man with what's his face who played Elton John? Did you see that movie at all?
I'm failing miserably. I never watched it.
You really ought to watch it, because the movie is really more about Bernie Taupin than it is about Elton John. Surprisingly so. You get kind of a glimpse behind what motivated him to write the music that he wrote. And he is a superb, legendary, the guy, he as much credit and as much recognition as he gets will never get enough recognition in my book for just how great of a songwriter he really is. And on the heels of Jan Wenner's remarks, which we talked about in a previous episode, he had a response
He said he, during his acceptance speech, I'm going to read this. He said Toppin hailed all the quote unquote articulate women and articulate black artists in the Hall of Fame who inspired him. And the crowd gave a loud response to that.
Wow. Rightfully so.
So he actually went out of his way to respond to Jan Wenner's idiocy. So,
yeah, and doing it and putting the Rock Hall on blast at their own ceremony. The guy's a genius. I didn't see the movie Rocket Man, but I did. He was on Mark Maron's podcast that I'm a big fan of recently. It was a great interview. And he's also like close buddies with Alice Cooper. One of Alice, if more in my world, I love Elton John and I had great songs, but more in my world, the Alice Cooper record From the Inside, he co-wrote that with Alice. And so it
didn't
is
know
a,
that.
It is a great, if you want to hear that Elton John stamp from Bernie on an Alice Cooper record, it's a concept record about Alice's time in the asylum. And so it's absolutely like just the guy is a genius songwriter, and it's he does amazing work with Alice Cooper on that album.
Totally agree. Robbie Robertson, they had a little in memoriam for Robbie Robertson. They had a bunch of people up that did some stuff, and I thought that was pretty cool too. And here's the thing. I sent this to you. I think you watched it. Tom Morello was the, Rage got inducted. Tom Morello was the only person who showed up, gave a really lightning rod speech, man. I sent it to you. Did you watch it?
I did not. I'm batting right now for every text message I receive, I either look at or respond to probably fewer than 5% of them. I've just been insanely busy. So I did not watch Tom Morello's speech. I did, however, see a transcript of him telling people to throw bricks. And so
he did.
I'm aware he did a call to arms.
Yeah, he said, if you're an anarchist, throw a brick. But I'm going to read a quote, a couple of things that he said here. He said, the lesson I've learned from Rage Fan. His speech was amazing. Anybody should watch it. It's pretty cool. The lesson I've learned from Rage Fans is that music can change the world, he said. Daily I hear from fans who have been affected by our music and in turn have affected our world in significant ways. Organizers, activists, public defenders, teachers, the president of Chile and Finland have all spent time in our mosh pit. Can music change the world? The whole fucking aim is to change the world, or at a bare minimum, to stir up a shitload of trouble. So yeah, dude, it was a pretty cool speech. So yeah, that's just a couple of highlights for the much maligned Rock and Roll Hall of Fame ceremony. Scott, any final thoughts on this year's Hall of Fame before we move on to our next item real quick?
None. I pay very little attention to anything that's going on with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and I'll probably continue to adopt that philosophy. All right, we're at over 20 minutes of news here, Rico. What else do you have?
Yeah, so this one's super quick. More Van Halen bullshit, man. Sammy Hagar, these guys just and I think I'm validating it by talking about it, but these guys just can't stop, dude. They can't let it go. So Sammy Hagar once again is piping in about an Eddie Van Halen tribute. Okay, should there have been one? That ship has sailed. It's too late to do that now, but should it have happened? It should have happened the day after he died. I think we can all agree on that, but that ship has sailed. Those guys hate each other. It's all contingent on Alex Van Halen. He is the biggest get off my lawn, crusty, grumpy guy in rock and roll right now. And he doesn't give a fuck about anybody else, let alone Hagar and David Lee Roth. Okay. So Hagar, he's like, I'm so disappointed at how they've handled everything, he says, including when I left the band. Okay, here we go. Drudging up old shit again that hasn't been talked about a million times. When I left the band the way they did, the rocker said, the dysfunction in that band when I was in the band the first time. When I was in the band, I'm going to break out Uncle Stan here. When I was in the band the first 9 years, we got along like freaking brothers and sisters. And we were happy together. One big family, Scott. Things went wrong. Then, of course, drugs and alcohol came in and it turns ugly. He just talks about dysfunction. that is the reason why they, Scott, help me here. Why is this still a topic? Why do they keep drudging up when they were in the band 30 years ago?
Well, Sam did, Van Halen did just put out a box set of the Hagar years. So it's remastered, not remixed. So it is, the Hagar years are finally getting some attention from the people who own the Van Halen catalog. It's been forgotten for decades, and the band themselves, after Roth rejoined, stopped paying any attention to it as well. So maybe it's just a matter of like keeping, you know, the more you can kind of keep Van Halen and Van Hagar in the blabbermouth headlines, you know, the Loudwire headlines, then more you can keep them on Rock and Roll Autopsy, maybe the more units of the box set you'll shift. I don't know. But Sammy just, he's talking about it all the time. I've lost some respect for Sam. I used to always see Sam as like a real solid guy. It's funny because when you compare Sam and Dave, you would think that like Dave is super flamboyant. He's over the top. He came from a rich family. His dad was a doctor, you know, and then Sam, total blue collar guy, self-made guy. Father was an alcoholic, you know, so, I mean, total like blue collar background. So you would think that I would like identify with and follow Sam more, but I've always been more of a Roth guy, you know. Both are and Roth, of course, is like super cantankerous too, so he's like bipolar kind of thing. Which I always thought Sam was like super rock solid, just good dude, rock solid dude. But boy, this last decade of Sam just running his mouth all the time and seemingly unable to just kind of let the past be the past is really turned me off to the guy, you know. He's become like a little bit like a Dave Mustaine type. It's like,
yes,
you know, let it go, man. You had a great career. Like, why be bitter?
God, real quick before we take a break, how much do you dislike Van Hagar? They really just he and the guys really took Van Halen and turned him into Creed, in my opinion. Kind of this sappy pop-ish. I really don't like Van Hagar at all. What is your thoughts on Van Hagar? Like, really, how much do you like or not like them?
I'm just a huge fan of Eddie and Alex, and so I'll spend time with the records just to kind of hear that crazy kinetic energy that is those two doing their thing on their instruments, and I can kind of put the Sam stuff out. I think it's a mixed bag. I think ultimately the four records they did with Hagar are pretty uneven. They're spotty. There's moments of just straight up like soccer mom rock, which is just like it's but some of the songs are well crafted. There's craft at work, you know, there's actual like craft to them. So I get it, but I do think it's just spotty. I think it's just kind of like there aren't any, like, I think the first six Van Halen records with Roth are just unassailable, just top to bottom. There's not a bad track. It's just, they're perfect rock albums, in my opinion. And in the Hagar era, you just get the spotty thing happening. So, and with some outright bad stuff too. So that's my
do you have a favorite song of the Hagar era? I kind of do, actually. Mine's Amsterdam. What about you?
I love the guitar playing on that one. Mine is probably on that same record. It's probably Feeling. It's probably the closing track.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's the super epic ending to that song. Oh, yeah. Yep. That's a giant song, dude. Yep. That is a big, giant song. Cool, man. Well, there you go. So we're going to take a quick break. And for our 100th episode, we're going to have a special guest with us to talk about the Rolling Stones. So stick with us. We'll be right back.
Looking for a good rock and roll book? Do you watch a ton of rock and roll documentaries like I do? Well, that's why I started the Rock Talk Studio podcast, to be the place to go for previews, reviews, and recommendations of rock and roll books, documentaries, and movies. Every first Tuesday of the month, the Rock Talk Studio gets you caught up on all the latest and points out where to go for the good stuff. Give me 20 minutes and I'll get you caught up on the world of rock and roll books, docs, and movies from every possible angle and leave you with a no-doubt decision on where to spend your time and money. Fan or just casual fan, or maybe you're on the fence and just looking for something new to check out, either way, I got you covered. Recently on the show, I've talked about books and documentaries from everyone and everything from David Bowie, Randy Rhoads, and the Allman Brothers, to the Abbey Road Studios, Cheap Trick, Stevie Ray Vaughan, Little Richard, and more. Join me, Big Rick, every Tuesday of the month as I host a Rock Talk Studio podcast, the ultimate review of rock and roll books, documentaries, and movies.
Our Mind on Music is a podcast that covers all things music. We cover all genres, and we welcome all perspectives, from musicians, producers, and content creators to music enthusiasts. We have discussions, interviews, opinions, and much, much more. We hope you'll join us every week, Our Mind on Music, on YouTube and all streaming platforms.
We are gathered here to remember rock and roll. Rock was born the rambunctious son of country, western, and blues. In the year of our Lord, 1955. On this day, the birth of rock and roll gifted under the world a gyrating pelvis, a throbbing beat, and a pulsating rhythm. A sound so infectious and rollicking that it would endow previously scrupulous young minds with identity, individualism, and purpose, thus setting forth a multi-generational pursuit of all that is loud, debaucherous, and unholy. But, sadly, like all earthly endeavors, rock too must perish. Oh, we mourn the loss of rock and roll, with its ridiculously old standard bearers still on tour and charging ungodly amounts of Mad Jack to witness their long past the sell-by date asses on stage, and with its chauvinism, misogyny, and whiteness no longer aligning with modern sensibilities, and with its aging, fist-shaking fan base kicking every would-be rocker off their proverbial lawn, rock has indeed passed into the celestial void. May rock rest in peace in eternal cacophonous slumber. Amen.
Thank you for that, Scott.
You are listening to the Rock and Roll Autopsy Podcast.
The Autopsy Report.
All right, welcome back. Hey, once again, thanks for joining us in our 100th episode. We've got a special guest tonight, Mark. Songs That Don't Suck. You don't suck. How's it going? How's it going, Mark?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. Thank you so much for inviting me. Like, I'm such a huge fan of the podcast. It's probably one of the first ones I actually started listening to when I started podcasting. So this is a little bit of a Cleveland boy dream come true.
Wow. So you're a big fan. That makes one. So now we've got one fan.
Yeah,
all right.
I was the psychopath that went back and started listening episode one when you were in like episode 70.
Yeah. You're the one that keeps our episode one numbers up. Thanks for that.
Well, Mark, maybe you can help us settle a debate, because Rico and I actually got in a fight tonight because we can't remember what qualifies for whether it's a 7 or an 8 that you killed rock and roll. We've only done 100 of these, and we legitimately had an argument tonight over this. I contend it was 7. Rico says it's 8. What say you, Mark?
Yeah, and Scott,
it's 7.
All right, well,
what is
Scott,
it?
Scott gave me Scott gave me exclamation points in the text telling me to stop. So like I got yelled at.
Yeah. It's definitely 7.
All right.
So what should it be tonight since we're doing 15?
Oh.
We're going to leave it up to you, man.
Now I've got to do math.
Oh, hey, by the way, did you stop by the front desk and get your visitor's badge and your lab coat?
I did, yeah. And even they gave me these weird goggles too. So
good, yeah, because there's going to be some blood spatter tonight, so you want to keep your eyes clean. So good job on that.
I'm going to say that 12 is probably the threshold for tonight.
Let's do it. 12 it is.
12 it is. Oh, jinx!
All right, Rico, did you do your autopsy report?
Yeah. So tonight, ladies and gentlemen, for our 100th episode,
We're from Sticky Fingers, 1971, per our man Mark. Brown Sugar, Scott. Brown fucking Sugar, April 16th, 1971. Rolling Stones, dude. Juicy 3 minutes 50 seconds. Jagger wrote this motherfucker, but did it kill rock? We're probably gonna find out here in a few minutes, eh?
Yeah, a great song, a great Stones record. Big fan of that whole period: Beggar's Banquet, Let It Bleed, Sticky Fingers, Goat's Head Soup, Exile. That whole window there, where the 60s overlap into the 70s. Huge fan of all this stuff. This might be the best Rolling Stones record, but a super controversial song. And the question is, and it's such a controversial song that we needed help. Mark suggested it. I'm terrified of doing an autopsy on this song because I just, it's rife with landmines and potential, sticky areas with sticky fingers, let us say. But
can't wait.
The question is, did it kill rock and roll? And to find out, we have, over the course of 100 episodes now, developed this proprietary science that we're using to try to figure out if these songs make sense in 2023. Rico.
Yeah.
If you're just a kid, just a schmuck, just some wet-nosed kid off the street, should you even attempt to perform an autopsy on one of these songs?
Yeah. So this one time when I was younger, we used to play basketball in this barn. It had a basketball court in it. And behind the basketball hoop was like just a bunch of shit and junk and stuff. And so we would pile up like old pallets and old dirty mattresses and get like a running, like those trampoline dudes that do the halftime show. We invented that like 100 years ago, except with old trampolines and pallets and shit. So one day we were doing this. And so I was like probably around 12 or 13 and I got a running start and I had the basketball and I was going to throw this motherfucker down, man. I was feeling it that day. So I got my run and start and I jumped up and I don't even remember if I missed the dunk, but guys, when I landed and I rolled, and this, I was probably like 20 or 30 feet in the air at least. And when I landed like on my ankle the wrong way, and I fucking shattered my ankle, dude. They had to carry me all the way home. I was in the hospital for a week. I had 4 hours of surgery on my ankle and I was out of school for 3 months.
Yikes.
So if anybody tries to do what we do, you're going to shatter the fuck out of your ankle and you're going to wind up in the hospital for a week. So don't break any bones. Don't hurt yourself. Don't have anybody carry you home because you're trying to do what only we can do.
I'm only slightly frightened at this now.
All right, gang. To figure it out, we've got five categories. They are gratuitous boomerism, excessive misogyny, wanton whiteness, malignant machismo, and culture vulturism. The band is the Rolling Stones. Great new Rolling Stones record out, by the way. A new Rolling Stones record. The band is the Rolling Stones. The album, Sticky Fingers. The track, the leadoff track, Brown Sugar. The category, gratuitous boomerism. Mark, would you like to lead us off?
I mean, they probably get the... actually, they're not even boomers, are they? No. Jagger's in his 80s, so they're like silent generation.
Yes.
So...
like, aren't there like great-grandkids boomers?
They might well be. Even saying that, I feel like they've got the boomer attitude with the silent generation not giving a shit about anything, because the silent generation was a bunch of badasses. These are the ones that stormed Normandy, right? Right. So, but... I think the swagger that comes through, like I'm going to give them the full point for gratuitous boomerism.
Nicely done.
Rico, how about you, sir?
Yeah. So again, when I think of boomerism, I'm trying to think of, is there something that they're doing or the way they're doing it or the message that they're conveying that just isn't going to fly today. Right. I mean, talking about, you know, some of the, and we'll get into that in our next category, but if we're talking about strict delivery here and message, yeah, dude. I mean, we're talking about, you know, raping slaves, and you know that alone could possibly garner at least a quarter of a point, right? So yeah, it's going to be for this particular category. I hate to do it for some reasons that I'll talk about later, but unfortunately, I'm going to give this one a 1.0.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a full one as well. I mean, yes, to Mark's point, these gentlemen predate boomerism. They're born before 1945. So these people are firmly ensconced in the silent generation, Joe Biden's generation, and Alice Cooper's generation. Everybody's getting older, yours truly included. But I'm going to score it a one as well because of this, the gonads to even sing this song. let's move on. Category two, excessive misogyny. And Mark, I have the lyrics available if you'd like me to read. I don't want to read a verse or two, but if you'd like me to, I will.
I think for the purpose of science, we need to hear a little bit of it, because when you listen to it and you're not paying attention, like when I was listening to it as a kid, I didn't hear it all. So I think there's a lot of people who might be surprised.
Yeah, because when you're a kid, you're just, all you're hearing is like brown sugar. I mean, you're not paying too much attention to that stuff. But Scott, sorry, man, I didn't mean to pull you away from your spoken word segment.
Gold Coast slave ship bound for cotton fields sold in the market down in New Orleans. Sky Dog slaver know he's doing all right. Hear him whip the women just around midnight. Brown sugar, how come you taste so good? Brown sugar, just like a young girl should. Drums beating cold, English blood runs hot. Lady of the houses wondering when it's going to stop. Houseboy knows that he's doing all right. You should have heard him just around midnight.
That's just how white folks will do you.
All right. Excessive misogyny. That's all the further I'm going to go, ladies and germs. Mark.
So
how do you score?
As I was kind of researching this, as I tend to do, originally this song was called Black Pussy.
I found that as well.
And I was like, wow, if I didn't think lyrically it could be any more just cancelable by today's standards, finding that little nugget of truth, I was like, damn. So, I mean,
hey,
that's
a term we haven't brought into the lab yet, Scott, cancelable. Wow. Interesting. Good. That's a good job on that one, Mark.
Thank you. So, I mean, lyrically, it's focused on basically sexual exploitation of owned human beings, raping of underage girls. So, I mean, I feel like anything less than a one would be offensive. So I got to give it a full one.
Rico, how about you, sir?
See, this is where I take a little bit of a different approach to this, guys. I mean, yeah. Is there excessive misogyny in this? Yeah, science. It's going to get a one. However, we have to, let's look at once again when this song was created. It was probably, you know, it was released in 71, but it was probably in like 70 when they were starting to write this thing. Mark, you could probably correct me. You do all the fucking time anyways. Why stop now? my point being is, remember the time, dude, we're deeply ensconced in Vietnam, right? It's 1970. People are fucking protesting all over the goddamn place. Again, recreational use of drugs is now only been mainstream for a few years, and it's still a new shiny new toy, right, to talk about. And Jagger admits that part of this song is about heroin usage. I think you guys could agree with that, because we've all seen quotes on that. So I think if we look a little deeper, guys, what we see is a guy and a band who's pushing boundaries. And it's really important that song like this was made, because in order to expand horizons, you have to push boundaries. And if the Rolling Stones didn't push the boundaries of this song, yeah, it's super controversial. They took it off of their set list. We all know that. It would definitely not fly today. However, because this song paved pushed the boundaries that it pushed, it paved the way for so much other music. Dude, Iggy Pop and the Stooges would not exist without this song. Christine 16 wouldn't exist without this song. The fucking debauchery.
Well, thank God for that.
Well, that might not be a bad thing. All the debauchery of the 80s wouldn't exist without this song. There's a lot of shit that would have been difficult at best to get out there had this song not pushed the boundaries enough to expand the horizons. For dude, the fucking Pistols. You think the Pistols would exist without this song creating a pathway for them? No, man. So yeah, the song, a big giant one for misogyny, but let's recognize it for the boundaries that it pushed and for the horizons that it expanded, guys, right?
Thank you, Rico. I'm scoring a one, and I'm gonna have to give it a firm and large and robust one as well. We're literally, I found this article, The Hidden Meaning of the Rolling Stones' Brown Sugar, breaks the song down into basically three sections. The first verse depicts a slave driver whipping a group of women, hence the robust number one. But by the third verse, there's a lady with a bevy of underage boyfriends, and the chorus is all about how a young girl should taste. And oh, by the way, it says, brown sugar has been pointed out by basically everyone, and according to Song Facts, was confirmed by Keith Richards, who knows a thing or two about a thing or two, is slang for heroin. So you have heroin, you have underage sex, you have this this slave angle going on here. So there's a hell of a lot going on in this crazy quilt of offensiveness. I'm going to score it a one as well. Let's move on. That was from an article called The Hidden Meaning of the Rolling Stones' Brown Sugar on the website grunge.com. Let's move on. Category three, wanton whiteness. Brown Sugar, the Rolling Stones. Mark, how do you score?
Oh, I mean, I'm trying to think about it in the context of early, 1970, 1969. Obviously, during that time, this was kind of the norm, right? Like, we didn't have the sensitivity that we do today. So I feel like it's right in line with what wanton whiteness would be. But I don't know that it's... And maybe I'm getting it wrong. I don't know. I'm torn here. I think I'm going to land on a 0.5 on this one. This one hurts, but I think I'm going to go 0.5.
Rico, how about you, sir? Wanton whiteness.
I'll keep my answer under 20 minutes this time. Yeah, I mean, musically, they're super bluesy. I think they're probably one of the more bluesier rock and roll bands out there. That's certainly nothing white about that. Jagger is clearly, I mean, I think it's been documented that he's not anti-culture, to put that nice, is about as vanilla as I can, right? He's certainly pro culture in that way. The song is, lyrically, the song really is about the forbidden fruit from more than one perspective, and how you really want the forbidden fruit. So he's speaking, he's not, but on the other hand, I'm going to personally give them the obligatory 0.5, because they're 80-year-old white Brits. But I can't give them the full one because there's too much about this song and too much about their music in general that is not super Cracker White. So for me, it's going to be a 0.5.
I think I saw recently a video of Jagger and he's like sitting on a bench. I can only assume it's backstage somewhere in a dressing room, and seated next to him is Ike and Tina Turner. And he's actually singing this song before it's released, like sharing it with them. And I just think like the gonads on this man, and it shows how different like the times were, right? And they're, and especially Tina Turner is like digging it. She's jamming on it, you know, and he's sitting there just kind of busting it out. And I just think that for wanton whiteness, this is there any more like glaring example of like white privilege than thinking you can write this song from this perspective and put it out into the world as one of the biggest rock bands ever and never be called on it? And literally they weren't for like decades, you know,
a long time.
I mean, in fact, it was kind of celebrated, right?
Yeah, true.
And I understand there's multiple ways you can look at it, you know, and there's a few women in Jagger's life that that believe this song is about them. One, he has a child with. Her name is Marsha Hunt. She's an African-American woman who's a singer and an actress. Has a child with Mick Jagger named Karis. She thinks the song is about her. Another is Claudia Lanier, who is another singer, did a bunch of a backing vocalist for numerous rock musicians, most famously Joe Cocker. And she dated Mick Jagger for a while and believes Brown Sugar is about her. I digress. I think this has got to be, I mean, this is like a full-on one. I just don't know how. My brother-in-law is an African-American. My boss is an African-American. Two, my boss is one of the smartest men I've ever met in my life, and I could not imagine having a conversation around this song with him and feeling comfortable in any way about it. But somehow in the late 1960s, it was okay. I don't know.
I think you nailed it, though. I think it's literally the white privilege that you were having in 1970 that allowed you to get away with it.
It has to be, right? I mean, because there's this, yes, heroin, yes, African-American girlfriends, multiple that Mick has had. Yes, you can write songs about anything and tell stories about anything. And I support that. I'm not for censorship, but I can kind of, I have a real hard time kind of getting behind this song. And it's tough because I really sincerely love the Rolling Stones and have loved this record all my life, but have been oblivious to the lyrics of this song probably until like 10 years ago. I'm ashamed to admit, you know, I mean, I knew what they were about generally. I just thought it was about wanting to bang black women, but I didn't really like wrap my mind around, how offensive. I follow Jimmy Malone, who was on Magic 105 for like decades on Twitter, and he tweeted out the lyrics to this song, and he's an African-American chap from Cleveland, and he tweeted out an article about this song recently, and it was just like, how is this ever okay, was his, you know, perspective. And I can't ever speak on behalf of how an African-American might feel about this, so I just have to defer to them. And if it's not cool, I'm going to say it's not cool. So big one for me.
I'm so glad that you said that about it, just a song about wanting to bang black chicks, because that is exactly the way I've always heard it up until about 10 years ago.
Yes.
When I read the lyrics, I am glad I am not alone.
No. And I felt really dumb because I mean, I don't know. Mick Jagger is not like he's kind of like sings like he's got, you know, like ice cubes in his mouth. There's a lot of slurring, not a lot of clear enunciation. And so I just never really picked up on what the words were. And I've listened to plenty of offensive shit, but I'm just going to defer to,
yeah,
African-Americans on this one. And if they think it should go away, then I'm cool with it. Maybe it should go away.
Well, and clearly they think it should go away because they took it off their set list for their live performances. So clearly they feel the same way.
Okay.
Yeah, and I saw an article with Keith where Keith is like basically speaking like the, you know, he's showing his age. He's like, basically, I'm just I'm paraphrasing, but he basically says something like, I don't really know why the sisters are upset about it. And then Jagger says, well, maybe it'll come back someday, but we've played it every night since 1970 or something. So,
well, yeah, even, dude, I saw a thing from Jagger that said, he's like, I can't believe I did that. That shit would never fly today, or some, to paraphrase. So I think he recognizes the gravity of the lyrics of that song and how that just won't work in today's society for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Keith just doesn't give a fuck. He's just like,
well, he's just happy to be alive, dude.
Oh my gosh, yeah, I can't find the quote in the minute. I got too many tabs up, but let's move on. So I'm scoring out of one. Let's move on. Malignant machismo, our fourth category. I can't do math. Wait till we try to add this up later. Rock and roll autopsy, Brown Sugar. Mark, how do you score?
Okay, you got to give me a little bit of context around machismo. We're really talking about machoism, right? Like that's what we're talking about.
Yes, sir.
And I keep going back to the lyrics of it, unfortunately, but I mean, when you're talking about slavers whipping women, like that's just really hard to get away from, you know, and
what you think?
I know I've got a keen grasp of the obvious, Rico, don't mess with me. but no, like when you think about it, I mean, in 70, you're obviously, it's very much a patriarchal society. You know, it's very much a man's man song. I mean, we all at least Scott and I interpret it as we're just want to bang black chicks. Doesn't get much more macho than that. I mean, like, let's just spin it for what it is. And shit, it's going to be another one. It has to be, right?
Rico, what say you, sir?
Yeah, I am also going to give it one from a couple of, I'm not going to steal your giant gonads thunder. I'll let you take that one. But yes to that part of it too, to be able to have, I'll let you just follow up on that, but I'm going to agree with that. And also my one for machismo is going to be akin to, you know, the Hetfield one or the Jim Morrison one. I think Jagger's just got that thing, man. Like that little dude is like, he casts a big giant shadow for as little as that dude is. And this like the Jagger machismo, you know what I'm saying? Like, dude's got that shit, that thing, that intangible, that's why I'm giving him the one. Yes, to your guys' stuff too. Yes, Captain Obvious stuff, but I'm giving him the Jim Morrison, James Hetfield one, but I'm going to call it the Jagger machismo. And yeah, he's for sure getting a one from me on that.
It's funny you mentioned his size. When you go to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and you see all the stage outfits from Mick Jagger, they literally look like clothes that I wore in terms of size, like when I was in grade school, like underoos that I wore in grade school. They're so funny because these guys are not big dudes. I found the quote. This is from Keith Richards, 2021, when the LA Times asked him why they dropped the song Brown Sugar. Keith Richards says, I don't know. I'm trying to figure out with the sisters quite where the beef is. Didn't they understand this was a song about the horrors of slavery, but they're trying to bury it. So he blames the black women. Golly.
Wow.
And then how nice of an 80-year-old white Brit to point out the horrors of slavery.
Yes. And yes. And how dare they find it disagreeable and force him to drop his song. And then Jagger says, we've played Brown Sugar every night since 1970. So sometimes you think we'll take that one out for now and see how it goes. We might put it back in, he says. So who knows? Malignant machismo. I'm going to give this. I have to beat this up. I'm sorry. I love the Rolling Stones. It's one of my favorite rock records of all times. I actually love this song as much as I hate to admit it now. But I'm going to give it a full one as well. Just the balls that it took. Maybe it didn't take balls back then. Maybe casual racism was such a part of everyday life in America that we just didn't think anything of it. And maybe it didn't take any guts. Maybe you could just say whatever the fuck you wanted and, you know, not have to endure any consequences. But I'm going to say that that just the fact that it exists, give it a malignant machismo. And Mark, to try to add some clarity to the category, if it's not, it's just basically, I love alliteration. And so there's that, but it just kind of is loosely about the idea of toxic masculinity and where that's at in the culture today. So,
yeah,
I thought I had it right, but
you got it. You do have it right.
You're on the nose, my man.
All right, gang. Brown Sugar. And Mark, I failed to mention, I hope you're keeping track of your points, because I didn't. Attaboy, there you go. See, this guy is not a rookie. This guy clearly knows that I'm not the mathematician on the team here.
This is what I do every week. I play along with the home game.
You're rock and roll guy. Autopsy, the home game. Man, maybe we got some marketing opportunities there.
And you're a data dude, so you're gonna be the math guy. Let's close out this autopsy here. Culture vulturism. Mark, what do you think? Brown Sugar, the Rolling Stones.
I mean, I think all the bands of that time were really vulturing off the rhythm and blues, you know, that it was coming out of the black communities. You know, your Little Richards. I mean, gosh, even like getting into like the Temptations, Four Tops, that kind of stuff, they're drawing all that influence, right? Like even like some of the horn arrangements and things like that, that you hear on some of the records. But they were also paving a path for what would become rock and roll. So like, like you were saying, Rico, they, you know, without Brown Sugar and the Rolling Stones, there's a lot of bands that just wouldn't exist. So, I feel like I got to give them credit for the DNA that they've left all over the place to make a really tongue-in-cheek comment.
Jagger's left some DNA all over the place. Trust
all
me.
Kinds of DNA all over the place.
It's good. I hear it's good for the complexion too.
Oh man, God. All right. I'm going to give this one a 0.5.
All right, Rico, how about you? Culture vulturism.
Yeah. I totally agree with you. They're clearly inspired by the old blues people that came before them. However, I'm going to differentiate the way they presented themselves versus, for example, Zeppelin, who like blatantly ripped off some people. You know, the Stones didn't blatantly rip off anybody. They were clearly just inspired by these people, and the music that they made sure certainly was inspired by that, but they was totally their own. The Stones have been the Stones, man, and completely unique. And for this, for me, this is going to get a big giant zero for me on this one.
Oh, Rico, I gotta disagree. I'm gonna fall more in line with Mark here. I appreciate where you're coming from. But it is kind of like the Stones are kind of one of these linchpin bands in the evolution of rock and roll. You know, it's funny though, because like you think of the Beatles, you always compare the Beatles and the Stones, right? And I always think of the Beatles as like this kaleidoscope of color and creativity. Yep. Whereas the Stones are really just a blues rock band. And that's really just a little bit of country thrown in. Later on, they introduced some disco and new wave elements here and there. But at their core, it's just a blues rock band. Even in the way that Richards plays in that open G tuning is just straight from the blues. That's like cigar box guitar stuff. And that's directly, I mean, you can just draw a straight line from that open G tuning to, you know, African-American culture, early blues, cigar box guitar kind of stuff. I mean, that's all right there, you know? So I'm going to give it a 0.5 because I'm seeing it in the broader context of the evolution and birth of rock and roll. But I also see the Rolling Stones as perhaps all those bands. You think of the Stones, the Who, the Beatles. I think of the Stones as being the one that's the most kind of related to the origins of blues. So I'm going to score it a 0.5. All right. So I am looking at my numbers. Let's tally this thing up. Before I do, does anybody have any final closing thoughts? I want to give Mark some space to talk about songs that don't suck here at the end. But Anybody have anything else you want to say about Brown Sugar before we see if this thing killed rock and roll?
Mark?
No, you know, it's one of those songs when we were talking about like what song to do, it's one of those songs that honestly I love the feel of it, but the lyrics are so problematic. So I felt like it would really lend itself to a good conversation. And I think that was true. So, yeah,
hopefully we accomplished that. It was on our master list of songs. I'll be honest with you, I've just been terrified to touch it, so I'm like always pushing it off. I'm like, oh, we did the Stones a year ago, let's push it back.
Let's do Nickelback instead.
Yeah, let's talk about Nickelback. All right, gang, so I've got a 4.5. Mark, what have you got, sir?
I have got 4.
And Rico?
Let's see. 3.5
for a grand total of
12.0.
Right on the nose. Wow. Killed rock and roll.
Yep.
The science works even when you add another lab technician.
Yep. That's
good to know.
Are we surprised that it was such a close call?
A little bit. Honestly, I thought it might have been in the 13.5-14 range.
Yeah.
I think I was a little bit more lenient than you guys were in general on some of these categories.
But the science works. So, Mark, I wanted to give you a little bit of space here before we run out of time, because Rico and I are way too cheap to pay for Zoom. because we're always on the verge of quitting this podcast.
Oh, please don't.
We don't
do that.
Want to invest in it. We're always like, do we really want to keep doing this? Mark, tell us about your podcast. You've got an ad on our show. People hear it every week. But
I do, and I appreciate that. So yeah, Songs That Don't Suck started the beginning of this year, 2023, and it was basically me getting so bored with listening to the same songs from high school and college and beyond, you know, before that. And I was like, how do I force myself to find new music? And this was kind of the vehicle that I had kind of come up with. I'd been doing different podcasts throughout COVID, like just trying stuff out. And this has just been a lot of fun to do. And I found some really interesting artists. I've had some really cool interactions with artists. Some of the smaller ones, when you tag them on social media, all of a sudden they're in your DMs, like chatting you up. And I'm like, oh, this is kind of fun.
Yeah.
So yeah, nice. It's a good time. And the podcast is slowly growing. And like I said, I really appreciate you guys running the ad on this show. Cause like I said, I'm a big fan of this show, and congrats on 100 episodes, man. It's awesome.
Hey, thanks, man. Sir. Well, go ahead. You first, Scott.
Oh, go ahead, Rico.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I think what you're doing is super cool. And I think it's important, too, because with the amount of songs and music out there, it can get overwhelming. And there's a lot of good stuff that is really easy to miss. And so it's important to have podcasts like yours to get people like me, who are idiots, like a little helper on what songs to listen to, because there's so much that like people like blockheaded like me miss. I need your podcast to help me discover new cool music. So what you're doing is super important, man. Good job.
Oh, thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah. I was just going to echo that. Exactly. It seems like a tremendous amount of work, and for people like, you need a curator out there. You need someone. There's so much out there who's saying, hey, I have similar taste in you as you do. Here's something that I like. You're going to like it too. So it's good work you're doing. We're talking about the death of rock and roll, which is like super negative and kind of fatalistic. And here you are saying, guys, there's plenty of great music out there. Give it a shot. Let me show you what's good. So you're doing great work.
Yep. Oh, thank you. Thank you.
You're like the yin to our yang, so to speak.
I'll say that. What do you expect from a bunch of Cleveland guys?
Gotta stick that, together, man. Right?
That's right.
You gotta be tough. All right, gang. It's been Rock and Roll Autopsy. We're 100. We're right there with Betty White and George Burns, if people really want some Gen X references. Thank you, Mark.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Mark. We had a blast.
Yeah, me
too. Good night now. Die!
that special rock and roll music. Yeah.
Let me tell you, so the lyrics to real rock music is nothing more than satanic cyanide. Get it out of your house, throw it out, and burn it. It has no place in the house of the righteous.
Guys, it was like a mystique. There's no mystique anymore.
To the dawn, loving till the morning. I'm gone.
Follow us on Twitter at RNR Autopsy, or you can send an email to rockandrollautopsy@gmail.com. And if we run across anything good, we'll mention it in a future episode. Thanks for listening. Later.
Well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.
Before you go, if you like heavy metal and stories, then you'll love Battle of the Bands, the narrative form metal podcast that unpacks the biggest rivalries in rock and metal history. Season 1 took in Megadeth versus Metallica, and Season 2 went across the divide to explore the beef between Judas Priest and Iron Maiden. It's like Business Wars, but metal. Find Battle of the Bands wherever you listen to your podcasts, or visit battleofthebandspod.com.